probably 18 or 19, it never occurred to me, with my burgeoning realization that I was a dyke, it never occurred to me that there was anything inconsistent, because of course in the Catholic Church, dyking was a bad word. There was some subtext going on between Martha and Mary, nobody told us about.
You're tuned to the Radio Deutsche Welle presentation, Tape and Telephone, the 30-minute program brings you reporting from an international perspective. British Labour Party leader Tony Blair could prove to be a power to be reckoned with by the Conservatives.
There is no doubt that those Conservative MPs and ministers who are thinking intelligently about politics are very...
The thing is, there's a pulling, because there's no real Labour or
outlet. The Labour Party.
And you're always segregated. So either have these feelings...
On the Greek-Albanian border...
Completely.
It's interesting how some of the most traditional religions are conducive almost to because of same sex, like,
and all those men running around in dresses.
In case of Catholic. Yeah. Well, as a Mormon, I a lot of people don't know much about Mormons, but the beliefs are actually quite similar to the Catholic Church, except Mormons are really, really serious about actually following through on these beliefs. So it's incredibly contained, and everyone knows everything about you. It's a really strong community, very family values oriented. And so, of course, if you were gay or lesbian, you could still participate as long as you promised to never have sex. So there was actually a gay choir director in my community, but and he was able to not have sex for quite a few years, but eventually he left the church, and now he's one of my role models.
I mean, that brings up the question of dignity for the Catholic Church as well, this separation between, and you mentioned it as well, the separation between acts and identities or feelings, if you like, as well, and how certain religions will try to perpetuate this kind of division between the two. And it's a very difficult thing to negotiate if you want to hold on to both the religious aspect of your upbringing and at the same time assume a queer identity.
I find it interesting that there are so many religious groups that are for queers who are continuing to practice their religion. And like my view on it is really, I really have trouble, you know, understanding how you could be part of a group that would support doctrine that, you know, totally makes you invisible and makes you, you know, into a pervert. So I just find those two things coexisting really difficult to understand.
I think one of the really tricky things about identity within the context of Catholicism is that, unlike some extremely right-wing Christian churches, there isn't a really obvious, really out sort of backlash and condemnation of homosexuality. It's all very inferred. It's all cloaked in this hate the sin, love the sinner kind of talk that can make it really, really difficult for you to ever come to grips with the fact that there is an identity there that you can be identifying with. In a sense, I think it would have been easier for me if my whole life people had condemned horrible perverts, because at least I would have known horrible perverts existed. I honestly had no clue. I was the president of the Ontario Catholic Student Federation in high school, in grade 11 or something in Ontario, and started to have a very torrid lesbian affair with my executive assistant. And I still have a soft spot for her in my heart today. And it, in a very real sense, I mean, I sort of knew something was wrong, but I didn't know exactly what was wrong, because let's face it, we're Catholics. We don't read Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, or Numbers, so we weren't into the heavy-duty sort of Old Testament biblical commandment sort of thing that was going to tell us it was wrong to lay down. Well, even then, it would have told us it was wrong for men to lay down with men and dogs to lay down with dogs and dogs to lay down with men, but it wasn't wrong for women to lay down with women. It just never happened anywhere in Catholicism, so there was nothing for me to identify with in order to rebel against the church. I knew I was doing something I shouldn't talk about, so I didn't talk about it, but I didn't stop doing it.
But luckily you were smart enough to figure out that you should be doing it, whereas I was just so oblivious to the possibility of, like, anyone I knew or myself being queer that I just had no sexuality.
Stephen, how did it work out for you in terms of your community's rhetoric with regards to... You said there's no such thing as a recognition of a homosexual identity, but what was what did people say about the acts, or was it ever spoken about?
They see it's cloaked under all like this term that says unfavory acts, which lumps homosexuality, bestiality, as she said beforehand. It's all lumped together, under one umbrella. It's not specifically said. They're all put together on the one thing. And they believe it's a choice. They believe you're choosing this because it's only acts. And since it's very, the idea of family values, as you said, for Mormons, the family values are very important. It's really, you know, have children. It's one of the, it's the first commandment. The first commandment, if you look in the Old Testament and Genesis, is the first commandment to have children. It's one of the most important things. And everyone's a matchmaker. I would go to my parents' house. There'd be this girl sitting there. Poor girl doesn't know what's going on. I'm sitting there and I'm going, ma, you know. But she's so religious. She has so much faith and so on and so forth. But for the other person, it's not really fair. And everyone's matchmaking. And then here I am, matchmaking all my other friends, you know, men with men and stuff like that. And they go, what's wrong with you? You know, they're not used to it. And so, you know, it's in the culture that everyone's matching each other up. And very family-oriented, like you said. It just, it's weird things that do happen.
So how does your family deal with the fact that you're gay?
Not very well. There's total denial, and there's sometimes they slip by, you know, they get curious. My brothers are a little bit better than my parents, but, you know, once I always tell my mother that, you know, my brother had broke up with his girlfriend, and she gave back all this. He gave back all the stuff and everything. So I told my mother, well, when I broke up with my boyfriend, you know, I gave back all this stuff, and she kind of, like, slipped, and she was, what did you get? You know? It's like, it just, all these little things, because it's for, they're also having the pulling, and because it's a, their children are sort of their, that's, we don't have missionaries and stuff like that, so to keep the religion or the race going, it's only by procreation. They don't go out and have missionaries. I think Christians, they go out and they go out to convert, but us, it's discouraged to go out and convert people. It's the only place or the only way to keep us going. That's why, you know, it's really important that children stay in and assimilation, and this, they see this as a form of assimilation, or because I'm being lost, which is very
difficult. So what's worse, is it the fact that you've moved out of that community, or is it the fact that you identify as gay? What's worse?
They're both equally bad. Yeah, both is equally bad, because you're like, you're taking away from the community, and this is a person that they feel is lost. They have like certain organizations that take non-religious Jews to become religious to keep us growing. It's a very minority mentality, and it's very close-knit, and as you were saying before, everyone knows each other's business, the neighbors, well, the neighbors think, and what will this one say, and what's on not. And
do you think your parents are less respected in the community because they have a gay son?
Well, I don't think everyone in the community knows. People are starting to have doubts at my age, not married, with no children, you know. People are, like, doubting or just, like, pushing for more matchmaking stories here and there. But they'll look, I'm sure that's how they feel, or that's how they feel being perceived as not being successful or something like that with their children, or what did they do wrong, which we all grew up in the same kind of, my brothers and I, we all grew up in the same kind of environment, you know. So it's very hard to say, because we were the four boys, and I went only with boys' schools, you know, and so it just, you don't have social skills also, certain social skills that, of course, at a certain age, you get more motivated to get certain skills, which I don't have, so it's, and maybe it's an excuse, I don't know.
Something I'm totally curious about is, just because of how strong my belief was in the church, and then all of a sudden, when I realized I was queer, it's like, kind of everything fell by the wayside,
yeah.
And I pretended that it really hadn't affected me, like that I could just like cast it away and I would be fine, I wouldn't be affected by all the stuff that I had learned my entire life. And it happened one time where I just started getting intense guilt, and I thought, oh my God, I'm gonna go to hell. And I was like lying in bed, just had great sex with my girlfriend, and I'm like feeling so guilty, and I'm so glad it only happened once, and it was just momentary, and I got over it. But like, does this happen for you guys?
Well, in my first incarnation as a university student in the early 80s at York University, I would go to I went to Mass just about every day, and I was involved in a very torrid relationship with probably my second lover, also a devout Catholic, and she, I would come back from Mass every Sunday evening and break up with her, particularly if the reading had been from Paul. And I break up with her and tell her that, you know, I just couldn't do this. It was wrong in the eyes of the church. I knew it was wrong. It was a sin. And I had to, you know, I was stronger than that. There were all these other sins that I didn't commit. So why should I commit this one? And I would break up with her. And I would go back to my room and I would sort of reflect. And around 3 o'clock in the morning, I would sort of skulk back into her room and use my pass key and kind of climb into bed next to her and say, oh, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry, Dewey. Can you ever forgive me and we'd be back together until the next Sunday? And it went on like that for a long time. And then I woke up one day and I realized I had never actually believed that a person would be condemned for any kind of sexual activity that they undertook as long as it was consenting. I never believed any of the more right-wing teachings of the church. I believed in things that I took to be the lessons of the gospel that were very sort of philosophical lessons, none of which are to any degree reflected in, for instance, the more homophobic and more misogynist sections of the gospel of the letters of St. Paul and some of the apostles. I had a very liberating kind of faith because I was taught by Jesuit priests and Notre Dame teaching sisters, and they were all very much into a very social justice oriented liberation theology. And I thought that's what Catholicism was about. We're to make heaven on earth, and we're to free everyone through this tremendous revolution. And by the way, Jesus Christ says not only is it okay to do this, but we have to do it. And I thought Catholicism was about accepting everybody and accepting everything. And when I'd ask my priest, what's the church's position on birth control? He'd say, well, as with everything, the church feels it's a matter of conscience. Now, to a degree, he was lying. He wasn't lying to me. He was omitting this large section of the truth. I think knowing that there were a lot of us who were instantly going to kind of rebel against that kind of mentality. But when I realized how opposed the church was to the way I was living my life, I just ditched that part of the church and kept the part of my faith which was important to me.
We're going to go to a song now, but and after we come back, I want to sort of oppose my own version of Catholicism to what you just talked about, because we had very different Catholicisms going on here. We're going to go to a song, and we'll be right back.
It's a selection from Fiddler on the Roof.
Fiddler on the roof. Sounds crazy, no? But in our little village of Anatevka, you might say, every one of us is a fiddler on the roof, trying to scratch out a pleasant, simple tune without breaking his neck. It isn't easy. You may ask, why do we stay up there if it's so dangerous? We stay because Anatevka is our home. And how do we keep our balance? That, I can tell you in one word, tradition. Tradition, tradition. Tradition, tradition, tradition. Tradition. Because of our traditions, we've kept our balance for many years. Here in Anatevka, we have our traditions for everything. How to eat, how to sleep, how to work, even how to wear clothes. For instance, we always keep our heads covered, and we wear these little prayer shawls. This shows our constant devotion to God. You may ask, how did this tradition get started? I'll tell you, I don't know, but it's a tradition. Because of our traditions, everyone here knows who he is and what God expects him to do.
Whole day and night must scramble for a living, feed a wife and children, say his daily prayers. And who has the right, as master of the house, to have the final word at home? The Papa!
Show the way to make a proper home, a quiet home, a cozy start. At 3 I started Hebrew school. At 10 I learned a trade. I hear they picked a bride for me. I hope she's pretty. The sun, the sun's tradition. The sun.
Children say his daily prayers, and has the right as pastor of the house to have the final word at home. The papa. And in the circle of our little village, we've always had our many special types.
Hello, this is Buddy Cole for Queercore Radio. Put down your D-Light albums and shut up and listen. It's Queercore, it's for you.
This is Buddy Cole for CKUT, C-Cut, for those who've lost their little blanket. 90.3 FM, Montreal.
Whoa! Ha! Hello, we're back. And if you're wondering why, if you've just tuned in and you were hearing a selection from Fiddler on the Roof and you're wondering why, this is Queercore and Dykes on Mics. We're doing a joint show today, and we have our topic is confronting one's religious heritage if one happens to be queer, and how do we do that? I know it sounds kind of like Shirley or something, and a topic that Shirley would do, but we're putting a different spin on it.
No, I mean, regardless of the different spin, though, every time I've been able to talk to someone about their religious background who's had a similar strong religious background as me, it's like intense, like bonding. It's just, I mean, I think it's really valuable to talk, a subject to talk about.
Absolutely. And Stephen, you had some responses to that Fiddler on the Roof selection.
Why didn't they play Matchmaker? That's what I wanted to hear.
But he was doing some great dancing here in the studio.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, we have separate dancing, you know, so we're used to it.
So I wanted to talk about
balance, whether it's sex or food or anything. It's very regulated how you should be done. We don't have this total, I think, like you have, total abstinence. Like, for me, that's, like, totally foreign. I don't know. I don't find that very realistic, but...
Oh yeah, I used to. What's that called? I only know it in French because my Catholic background is also French Catholic, which might be somewhat different from yours as well. But that period before Easter, where you're supposed to
Lent,
where you're supposed to deprive yourself of certain things that you enjoy, and one of which always used to be masturbation for me.
And so you weren't supposed to be doing that in the first place.
And so that's it. But I thought that this was something that I could give up for God for 40 days. But of course, it never really worked. But I tell you, after 2 weeks of holding back, boy, was it great when I finally got around.
The flesh is weak.
Yes, the flesh is weak. And so this doesn't strike a bell with you either, does it?
Well, there aren't certainly... Christianity, there aren't any images of any sensuous women. I mean, there's no women don't have sexuality to any degree in Christianity, and there are no, I mean, I suppose it's consistent with certain segments of our community to lust after the various half-naked figures in the Stations of the Cross or whatever. But there's certainly nothing there that would turn a dyke on. I mean, going up and mopping the brow of some sweaty, bleeding guy. Which is really the only role that any women had in the Gospels, doesn't appeal to me from a lesbian point of view. And there were, when I grew up, I wanted to be a priest. I never for a second was stupid enough to think I wanted to be a nun and give my life to others. And
no, I wanted
not,
to be a nun.
Yeah. Well, sure, it was probably the habit.
Yeah, well, speaking
I like the suits. The priests got to wear those really neat little, you know, collar
things.
Oh,
the best uniform that they had, or the best costume that they had. But this traditional Irish priest that we had brought with him, what are they called, the cassock?
Cassock,
yeah. Yeah, which is a full-length black gown, basically, with a Roman collar on top. So one Halloween, our school was having a black and white dance, and I thought, oh, great, you know, black and white, let's borrow the priest's cassock. So, of course, he was very enthusiastic about lending it to me because he always wanted to see me in it, quote unquote. This is what he told me, and so I got my brother's kiss boots, you know, with the 4-inch high heels, fishnet stockings, white. Gave myself this kind of satanic kiss makeup, you know, black and white with a lightning bolt going through my face, and spiked my hair and dyed it black.
It's like the Rocky Horror Picture Show goes to communion.
Yeah, something like that. I also had white gloves, you know, the whole thing. And I showed up at this dance in my high school, which wasn't a Catholic high school. And of course, I was the only one that had a costume on. I was the only one that was dressed up. And at first, people didn't recognize me. And when they finally realized who I was and that I had fishnet stockings, you know, shock and horror broke out. And you know, many people wouldn't talk to me that night. And in fact, the priest in question also happened to be the pastor of the local police force and regularly patrolled with the policemen, and so found an excuse then to go to our school dance and see me dressed up like this, and he seemed to get a mighty big kick out of it. That was my little moment of transgression at the time, and it was a lot of fun.
Wasn't too upsetting?
No, he wasn't upset, no.
How about you? You weren't upset?
Well, I was upset that he wasn't upset. More than anything. So, is there other instances of religious drag that we can talk about? Is there?
Well, we have a holiday in the springtime called Purim, where people masquerade, but usually the boys dressed up as the male figures and the girls dressed up as female figures. It's very rare that someone crossed. I never saw it being crossed. Not where I grew up. It wasn't crossed whatsoever. Just really, really rare, and people would be too afraid anyhow. It's you're having fun, but yet it's, like I said again, it's very limited, within a limited amount. So they let people go to a certain degree, and then you're stopped. So it's very regulated in that way.
Well, we used to play church. We'd play mass, and I'd want to get to be the priest, and I'd take my best black shirt, and I'd roll the collar underneath and do it up, and then I'd take a little piece of toilet paper and fold it very neatly and run it over the button so it would look like a Roman collar. And you know, we'd get dressed up, and we'd take little bits of bread and squish them and cut them into circles and do communion. But we never said the holy words because we knew somehow that would be wrong. But I wouldn't play unless I got to be the priest.
I have a Mennonite friend who I was hoping would be here today, but isn't. Who talks about something happening every once in a while in the Mennonite community, which is actually quite accepting of gays and lesbians on the whole. And what they like to do is Amish drag, because Mennonites and Amish are quite closely related. And so among the Mennonites, a really big deal is for the boys to dress as Amish women. So all these instances of religious drag, it's kind of fun. Fun. Do we have perhaps one last musical segment that we can go to, and then we'll wrap this up?
The lunatic is all the grass. The lunatics are on the grass. Remembering games and days change their lives. Got to keep the loonies on the back. The lunatics in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper rolls their folded faces to the floor. Every day the paper boy brings more. And if the dam breaks up in many years too soon, if there is no room on hand, and if your head explodes with dark foreboding too, see you on the dark side of the moon. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Hi, I'm Annie Sprinkle, and I'm a dyke on a mic, and it feels really good. It's a little hard, but this is CKUT 90.3 FM.
This is CKUT 90.3 Eartha Kitt. I was thinking my owl was not quite clear.
And we're back. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. We meant to play Jesus Loves Me, But He Can't Stand You, but we had a little bit of brain damage there. Oh well. Brain damage. That was the name of the song, not the state of our tech. Sorry, Elaine. So we're just going to wrap this up now. It's been a really interesting segment. We should do this more often. We've been talking, of course, about queers confronting their religious heritage, and actually, this has brought up more questions for me than I could answer. And I've been my mind's been kind of reeling, and I haven't said very much simply because I don't think that I had quite the same intensity of experience that you did, Charlene, in that I never really took the religious part of it seriously. In my parish, it was all about the French and the English fighting it out for control of the political power, and it was all about you know, who was going to donate the most to get the church built and that kind of thing. And so and ultimately my experience was quite nasty, and I ended up just turning my back and not really giving it much more thought. But I don't know. I guess what I'd like to end with is do either of you still hold on to some sense of spirituality, some sense of religiosity, I guess?
Yeah, I still consider myself a very spiritual person, and I don't consider myself a member of the church, and the church wouldn't consider me a member of it, but I still feel very wed to a lot of the tenets that I thought were very important philosophically in Christianity, and I basically live my life according to the same rules that I was taught, sort of stripped and devoid of petty moralism about my sexuality. I try to do what I think is right, and I think that comes from what I was taught when I was a kid.
So do you think basically that if you hadn't happened to be a big dyke, then that you probably would have stuck with
the
church?
I'd be Pope by now.
How about you, Stephen?
Well, I feel that it gave me a very good, strong point of reference, a very good background. I guess it's all relative. To some people I'm still considered very religious, and to others not. I just do, like as Charlene said, I do whatever I feel is right according to my situation. I mean, when you're gay, I guess you have to sort of make up your own rules, because there aren't much rules there to start with. So I just play it by ear. But I do have that very good point of reference and that strong sense of identity, which is really good, because it gives me the backbone and strength that I need to get through a lot of other things.
Yeah, I also don't really have any regrets, even though the church that I come from is totally misogynist, sexist, racist, and everything that I hate now, just because I think I have a really strong feeling and I know the enemy. Like, I know what I'm dealing with when I, you know, am working towards fighting these things. So, and also this strong sense of community is really important to me, too.
Well... Dykes on Mics is next. We'll have an original Dykes on Mics segment coming up after this. This has been a joint presentation of QueerCore and Dykes on Mics, and I thank you both, Stephen and Charlene, for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
listening to Dykes on Mics now, and Deb's not with us tonight just because she's feeling sick, but I hope she's listening at home. We have that was a really great segment. I really enjoyed that. We have an exciting thing on Dykes on Mics tonight, an interview with Susan Stewart of Kiss and Tell. And now Kiss and Tell are a collective of three lesbians from Vancouver who have been doing really innovative and challenging work on representations of lesbian sexuality. And they started with an art show that was called Drawing the Line, and many people are familiar with it. It turned into a postcard book, and it basically was showing sexual imagery that varied from the, you know, most vanilla to really intense, you know, SM raunchy scenes that many women, feminists, would find offensive. So they were leaving it up to the viewer to decide where they should draw the line. And Kiss and Tell continue on with this tradition of being very interactive and letting women think for themselves and respond to their work with their new book, Her Tongue on My Theory. And Her Tongue and My Theory is a book that we're going to talk about a bit later. Me and Aileen are going to discuss it. But I'll be coming back to you with Susan Stewart from Kiss and Tell after this musical break. And I think it's going to be Hole, who recently had lesbians moshing in the pit at Metropolis last week.
I am doll eyes, doll mouths, doll legs. I am doll arms, big veins, doll babe. Yeah, they really want you, they really want you, they really do. Yeah, they really want you, they really want you, I do too. I want to be the girl with the most cake. I love him so much, it just turns to hate. I fake it so real, I'm beyond fake. Someday you will ache like I ache. Someday you will ache like I. He loves to see them break.